time I was there on for a short while was Old English, which Sidney Gulick had a great interest in, and at least a great felt that it was important. But after a while, that was dropped, and so then it was just any, well, it was a rather broad range of languages, I guess. Usually it was ended up being French or German or Latin or what have you, but I don't know what they did with people, say, from the East. Japanese, would that be, I don't know.
Well, actually, I guess in a way, the offerings have expanded quite a bit now. They do have Japanese, and of course they have Russian, German, and I think they have some other languages there as well, but I don't know how many people actually took those courses for their language requirements.
Something still survives anyhow.
Yeah, something survives. I'm not very knowledgeable about exactly in what capacity. Can you think of any of the outstanding students that you've had over the years? Undergrads or grads?
I have the names in there.
In the publication?
Yeah. I looked over this last night, and this did bring back the students.
I dug out my copy from University Archives. Mm-hmm. I had pulled it, actually, when I first called you.
Let's see. Well, Greta Eisner, E-I-S-N-E-R, was an outstanding student. I used her, I still do when I teach Chaucer in the Eagle program, which I did a couple of years ago. I still use paper she wrote, which she turned later into an M.A. on Chaucer, paper on the Clerk's Tale. She went on to get her Ph.D. at Irvine, and then she taught in the State University of Virginia, not the University of Virginia at Charlottesville, that's private, but their state system. She taught there for a while. She died of a brain tumor a couple of years ago. She wrote me a long letter. I saw her a couple of times down here in the last 10 years, and then I hadn't heard from her a while, and I wrote her a letter, the longest letter I ever wrote her. I didn't have much correspondence with her, and then I heard, not from her, but from a student who had been in the class with her, and I guess he was a teacher and had some association afterwards, and he told me about this serious illness that she had.
Hmm.
But anyhow, Greta Eisner would be one.
Isn't that a shame? It's gifted people.
Terrible. She was, let's see, bring some others back here. Liscombe. L-I-S-C-O-M-B-E. I don't know that she's ever taught, but she was a good student. Did a thesis on the Pearl, the poem The Pearl.
Uh-huh.
And stunned me by coming back from England, where she'd been doing some work on it. Told me she'd gone to the British Museum, which is now called British Library, which sounds terrible. and they had let her examine the Gobbling Poet's manuscript. There's only a single manuscript like available. I had looked at it under glass, and I had thought you couldn't even get too close to any glass. They just handed it over to her. She told her that her request was that she was writing an MA thesis for San Diego State. It said, here you are.
They make her wear a pair of gloves, I hope.
Well, and here's Donna Gomez. I don't know what happened to her. G-O-M-E-Z. Teachers, I'm trying to think, Mona Baird, but her name changed. She taught at Southwestern for quite a few years.
Uh-huh. Yeah, can you think of people here in San Diego?
Some of these people do refer to high school classes, and here's Catherine Gittes. She's another good one. G-I-T-T-E-S, Catherine Gittes. She got her Ph.D. at UCSD, and she was outstanding. She taught some out there also. I don't know just where she is now.
I noticed that all these people are women. Did you have any very good male students?
I'm trying
students
to.
Go
I
through?
Had a very good man. Here's Charles Vitor in here, V-I-T-T-O-R, who's the chairman, he's at Grossmont, I guess. He was the chairman of the department. Oh. This was back in the 70s, so I don't know. Vitor.
Would you say that the English department has had its fair share of excellent students come through and move on to
good positions elsewhere? I think so. Eleanor Stewart, who taught for years down at San Diego, It's STEWART, San Diego Community College. She was an outstanding student, an outstanding teacher. Let's see, Catherine Gittes. This fellow was interested in Old English, Middle English, and he got his degree. I think he finished at UC Davis. I cannot think of his name. I know that he was interested in Nissan cars.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Huh.
Right.
Huh.
Let's see. Here's Stephen Potts. He was very good, too, Stephen Potts. He went up to Berkeley.
Rings a bell.
P-O-T-T-S. We knew his father, who was a tennis player at Moore Field and a retired Navy captain.
Hmm.
And Stephen
Potts.
That's
why I know the name.
Stephen Potts was an excellent.
We lived very close to that tennis court, by the way.
Which court now?
The one over at Morley Field.
Oh, you say you did?
We live very close to that.
You
right?
do now?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, goodness.
And we used to run to Morley Field and then walk by the tennis
yeah.
court there.
We
so does the Potts name appear anywhere there at the court? Because that may be why I recognize the name.
Well, possibly. This was back, you know, 15, 20 years ago, I guess, or more.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Stephen Potts was excellent. Funny, I'm glad I hit his name here. He was just excellent. He was doing writing at the time, and I'm sure he's teaching a college somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, his father was a retired Navy captain. Good tennis player. His father was a good tennis player. I remember him. I think he was the one who told me one time I was doing knee bends, trying to get him. I got down, he said, George, you're going to get down one day and you're not going to be able to get up.
Yeah, you have to be careful with those knee bends.
let's see, I wanted to see Stuart, C-W-A-R-T, and let's see, Charles Vitor, Grossmont, Joseph Tyler, he was a student, he was in Spanish. He's teaching in Georgia now, part of the Georgia State System. He got his degree from someplace, I forget where,
uh-huh.
PhD.
Most of these people go on for their PhDs and go on to teach in the university or college systems.
A good many of these have, yes.
Well, I think that the number of good graduates, the people who have gone through your department successfully, attest to the quality of the department itself.
Here's Mona. I called her Baird, but her married name is Palmer now. I remember that now, Mona Palmer. She's the one who taught it to Southwestern for some time.
Uh-huh, oh yes.
Let's see, Calvin, let's see. Yeah, if these people come back and I see their names here. Rich and Donna Jones. Soler Tosas, S-O-L-E-R-T-O-S-S-A-S, the Spanish names, that's two capitals there, Soler Tosas. He taught it. He may still, yeah, I heard fairly recently that he was down at San Diego Community College. That's in Spanish. Robert Thurston, I get a vague memory there, and he went on to teach. Here's somebody in a junior high school, Rocha, R-O-C-H-A,
huh.
And he has his M.A. He's teaching in junior high. It was, this again is some time ago though, this book of course goes back.
Now, who was it that nominated you for the Trustees Outstanding Professor Award?
I don't know. I don't know who had the idea.
You don't know who had the idea?
I don't know.
Uh-huh. Did you know what was going on?
Well, yes, because they they wanted to collect material, so they came and asked me to give them lists of names that people might be interested in writing about it. Incidentally, this distressed Mrs. Tigner, the department secretary, greatly. My middle initial is W,
oh,
not A.
Oh, no. How about that?
W from William family.
I never even noticed that on the cover of this thing. That would be a rather distressing thing to find on there.
It didn't bother me. It bothered her. She was upset.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of the secretary, that's one thing I don't get much comment on from the faculty members. Can you talk about the staff people that worked for the English department? Can you think
well,
of
Mrs.
any outstanding
Tigner, Mrs.
characters?
Mrs. Tigner, a large red-haired lady, and I can't think of her name now. Mrs. Tigner, T-I-G-N-E-R, was there for a long time. She came from Kansas and may have gone back to Kansas after her retirement. Of course, over Nevada, Nevada Genia, she was the pillar, Jack Adams' secretary for years and years.
Yeah.
I still see her in Nevada. She comes to the Anthony's once in a great while.
Does she?
So, yeah, she's great. I guess those are the two chief names, Mrs. Tigner, Nevada Genia, and as I say, this red-haired lady who was here for some time. I can't remember her name. I don't know any of the people there now. In fact, I haven't been up to the park. I go to school, I go to the library and bookstore. I was in the basement the other day of the Adams Humanities where I was making a tape from a record. But that's the only, I don't get to the, I don't know what's going on.
You don't
in
go into the department. I don't know who works there either. I'm not very knowledgeable about it. I know the people in the history department, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know the name Nevada Genia. Genia. Genia.
She calls it Genia.
Genia.
Yeah, this Genia.
She does not want to be interviewed.
Oh, she doesn't?
Which I think she's too shy.
Oh, she would be. She would be a great one.
Yeah, she would.
But she's on the inside. I mentioned that one of the members has said that people lived either as close or as far away, and we lived kind of far away. But she would be a great one. George Gross is another good one. If you could get him.
We have him on a kind of a joint. Interview with Ned Joy and
because he was in the administration
Jansen.
As well as the department, and he would be a great. He would also be able to pinpoint or name milestones better than I, because he was kind of aware of those things from both
from the administrative standpoint.
As well as the other, he could say, "This is when the department grew to this size, or
right.
undertook this program, or undertook that program." I knew it at the time.
But they all kind of blend together, don't they?
Yeah. For me.
I don't want to. I feel like I'm asking you to draw these out. So I'm going to go ahead and move on here with a few of these other questions to get onto another track. Oh, can you tell me anything about the Living Writers series and the Dead Writers series? Do you know anything about those things?
Don't know anything.
I'm woefully uninformed about those as well myself.
Like Clinton the other day when the lady asked him about, what was it, nuclear protest in New Zealand, he says, I don't know a thing about it. I haven't given it a thought.
I heard that. And he said, I'm afraid if I say anything, I'll wake up tomorrow and I won't know how to get myself out of the mess or something.
Yeah.
Well, can you tell me about any of your work with the SDSU Press, or the Campanile Press, or University Press, one of the names that has gone by?
No, because I never... Well, I did. They did do something for me. What did they do now? They did a condensed version of... What did they do?
Did they do something for you?
They did something for me, that is just as a classroom tool.
Oh, I thought that you worked as an advisor with them.
Oh, I don't... Maybe I did, and I forgot. They did a kind of a course outline. It was based on my effective writing, I think, as I recall it, and I got them to do that.
Kind of like a syllabus service.
I have a copy of the original books and so forth, but it's funny you mentioned. I remember running down there, but in connection with what they were running off for me, this little condensation of... condensed grammar
mm-hmm.
that I used in class.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I did. I guess I did. I'm trying, it's coming back. I did in connection with Ted Block's book on Wycliffe. I read that. And I guess I read that as an assistant or a consultant or something for them. They published his book on Wycliffe, and I read that.
That could very well be it, because they had faculty members serve as... They had faculty members serve as readers and advisors for publications they were taking on to serve as editors.
Yeah, that was probably it.
Were you able to think of any any special VIPs that came to campus?
John Kennedy is the chief one. And I mentioned my friend George Abbey, who was not really a VIP, but he was a recognized writer. He had done some novels.
Why did he come to campus?
He won the Shelley Memorial Award given by Yale for poetry one year. Abbey, A-B-B-E.
Oh.
And George Abbey, he taught at Russell Sage. He taught at the University of Maine when I was there just briefly. And then he later went to Russell Sage College. His letter is in here.
Uh-huh.
And in the letter, he's somewhere else. I guess he hadn't got to Russell Sage yet, or he moved on. I'm trying to remember. He was a writer in residence at another college. His novel, I don't recall the title of the, it's around here somewhere, but I don't know where.
Well, we could probably find it.
He gave a lecture out here, and it caused a little disturbance because he was rather liberal. And Jack Adams laughed and says he's just an old-fashioned New Englander, which is true. I guess he was the son of a New England parson, brought up in very straitened circumstances. They had never had any money. George was a very good scholar, very good writer. And
but the people here in San Diego considered him a liberal.
Yes. Mm. When he gave the lecture, I forget. I guess I heard it from Jack or something. Some people were distressed. This was back in the McCarthy era, I suppose, or long after that. And they'd asked me, some committee or Jack or somebody, they asked me if I could recommend anybody to give a lecture. So I recommended George Abbey because he, at that time, I think he'd written me. He was on a lecture series. So I said, I think he'd come if you want him. And they said yes.
What was the lecture series about?
It was not a lecture series, but he was giving a series of lectures himself.
But what was the event at San Diego State that he came for?
I don't know.
I guess I'll
look. He might have come just as... we had Jim Tidwell brought out, the man who wrote on Chaucer and Proverbs, came from Ohio State, and he'd known the man back there, and this was the man's best-known book, and he had him come out and talk to a group once. I don't think it was any special occasion for that, and I think George Abbey, I don't know, I guess it was, Jack Adams might remember. I'll ask him the next time I see him.
Event that the English department sponsored,
I'll ask Jack the next time I see him. He remembers.
Yeah, and of course we all know about Kennedy being there in 1963. Yeah. I have pictures of it and so forth, but what can you give me any inside views on it? You mentioned something to me about it on the rooftops.
A helicopter coming down and landing in what until very, very recently was a parking lot down below Social Science, and I guess they put a building there now.
Giant parking structure.
Oh, a big parking structure. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, anyhow, landing there, and on the... apartment houses around up on, up by the gym.
Yeah.
And around there.
On 55th Street.
Soldiers stationed with guns.
I didn't know about that.
And we the faculty observed that as we went down in procession, you know, and here I, then I remember him combing his hair a little bit behind the podium or behind the platform before he...
Take that.
Yeah, before he... walked out there to, I guess we gave him some kind of a degree, I don't remember.
They gave him an honorary doctorate.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm, the first honorary doctorate ever given.
And we were, the faculty passed, as we entered, he was kind of back there, as I say, combing his hair. And we were about, I don't know, from here to that wall there away from him, that close.
A stone's toss.
In view of what happened shortly after. In that sense, there wasn't any check of faculty, photographers, and students, and so on.
The security that was close to him was not great, in other words.
Yeah.
So what were they doing up there on the roof with machine guns?
I don't know.
They couldn't do anything from up there, could they?
Some kind of guns. Maybe they weren't machine guns, but they were stationed, soldiers stationed up there, or guards stationed up there.
Well, how about the McCarthy era on campus?
Well, Sidney Gulick was violently, very much upset by the whole thing, and I was, in my usual, not too political sense, I just thought McCarthy would be taken care of somehow, although I wasn't worried about it. But on campus, it never affected me. I mean, he was censured shortly after I got here. The wind was all taken out of his sails. The Senate censured him, and that was the end of it.
Okay, so
he was an alcoholic. Anyhow, he didn't live much longer.
Right.
So that was. But when I first came out, I remember Sidney being very concerned when I came out for that semester, that spring semester. He was more concerned than I was, but he was probably right to be more concerned. I just wasn't paying that much attention to politics.
He was probably much more prevalent in the earliest 1950s, 52, 53,
died down.
I guess Steinmetz went through.
Yeah, that's right.
Loyalty oath problem. And
that's right. That's true.
And there was another individual, too.
Yes, all that was kind of winding
right
down
you.
Or being wrapped up or coming to an end. When I came in, it didn't affect me.
Didn't affect you personally.
No, uh-uh.
I want to ask you also, and this is kind of an overall, sort of a blanket sort of a question, because I don't have any detailed questions to ask you anymore. Do you have any thoughts about the quality of the students in the 1950s?
Well, they were good. It seems to me I've always had good students. In the 50s they were good. I remember that Mona Baird, later Palmer, and her husband, who then they were later divorced, they were in class together in Elizabethan literature. We read Spenser's Faerie Queen, which is not the most, not the easiest thing in the world to read. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And the class was enthusiastic about it. It was a good class. And so that was when I first arrived. And then I mentioned, I can't think of the word now. When you're kind of distressed psychologically, you have a block or something, there's a word for it. And when I came out that first year, a student didn't turn in his homework because he said, I have this problem, this block. And it was a new term that I'd never heard before. Something like psychedelic, but not psychedelic, of course. But
I don't know, a mental block of some sort?
Yeah, some kind of psychological mental
something
word.
Disturbed him.
It seemed to be kind of typical of California to me at that time. Yeah, that's a big digression.
And actually, I would say it would be more typical of California in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And did you see a change in the quality of the students from when you first started there to when you retired?
Not really, but I think I escaped much of that. For one thing, the courses that I taught, I would see it in the, where I would see it would be in the freshman course, I would think, because Chaucer and medieval survey seminar, medieval literature, both required, what the students called a kind of language, not really language, Middle English is not a foreign language.
Mm-hmm.
You modernize it when you do Chaucer, but mm-hmm. the chief difference is pronunciation, of course. The grammar is the same, structure of language is the same. The structure changes from Old English to Middle English. That's Old English is synthetic, is inflected, Middle English is word order and it's modern grammar.
Mm.
But still, they had to look up words, and that required a little work. And so the period when it was felt elitist to require you to learn, to memorize, and to learn the inflections and so on. The people who, and I did in the literature, in the medieval literature, we went through English, it was morphology and phonology, and that was changed to sounds.
You're getting into linguistics here.
A
bit of linguistics, which I guess a lot of the students kind of
If they had the for a while the idea that grades were immoral and memorizing and so forth. They didn't take those courses, so I didn't see
that.
I had good students, these that I've been mentioning all the way through. In freshman English it would have been more apparent, but I don't really recall it. I mean, there were some who wrote well, there were some who
mm-hmm.
didn't write,
mm-hmm.
who had problems with grammar.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess maybe if there were some extremists, they maybe wouldn't stay in my freshman
mm-hmm.
class,
right.
because it was clear we were going to do grammar, we're going to have a weekly theme and so forth and so on.
Mm.
So I didn't.
You didn't see them.
Aware of that.
But did you know that the students were there? Could you see evidence of that? It's kind of a change in philosophy.
Yes, I had two experiences. One was in Chaucer, in the first meeting of the class, and a chap popped up, and I never saw him again, and made a little address to the class. He said, I want to ask a question, but he didn't want to ask a question. He wanted to talk to them. He wanted to give his own little, and which he did. He gave a little spiel that it seemed completely to him unnecessary to do Chaucer in Middle English. It was an elitist thing and so forth and so on.
Mm.
And he went on at length about 4 or 5 minutes, and 3 or 4 minutes about that. And so, it took me by surprise. But when he finished, I guess I got a chance to say one thing that this is poetry, and if you do it in translation, in modernization. Well, it's no longer Chaucer, no longer Chaucer's
right.
poetry. And but anyhow, he just kind of strode out. I never saw him again. And I think he was an emissary from whatever groups thought that this was a class warfare or so. I don't know what.
How funny.
So I had that.
Some radical thinking young upstarts. Not necessarily upstarts, I shouldn't have said that. But
I've seen, where I have seen evidence of that is in newspapers, including the L.A. Times and the Wall Street Journal, especially maybe a few years ago. And there was a good article in the L.A. Times about it about four or five years ago, listing the errors in grammar, spelling, and so forth, picked up in the L.A. Times and in the Wall Street Journal, and attributing it to that little downfall in the 60s
yes.
when the grammar was immoral and so forth and so on. And so I subscribe to that, and I still see these errors in supposedly literate, not to mention something like disinterested used in the sense it used to have of impartial and unbiased, and instead of uninterested. I imagine that's made its way in the dictionary now. But and gross things like between you and I and so forth. You
mm-hmm.
expect that of politicians and TV commentators.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Let's see. What's the mispronunciation they love? I can't think of the word now. Promotion and not promotion. Congratulations. D in place of T. Congratulations. And
oh.
so on.
You congratulations?
Get, yeah. You get that from the TV people. That's 50% of the time. And but yeah, I can see it in the writing and in the there, but I don't think I saw it in the classes.
Do you think that, of course, you've been out of the classroom for a while now?
I've been
but
out for a while. But as far as I've been teaching the EGLE program, but they're my generation.
They're a different generation, and so they are more appreciative of what you are talking about, and what you were teaching then. Do you have any sense of whether or not the appreciation for the original language? The original language that something was written in, do you see the appreciation for that coming back in the classrooms? Or do you have any idea?
In my time, as I say, I think I more or less escaped that because of the courses I taught. The people
right.
who took the courses wanted to learn about Middle English or Old English or Latin, medieval Latin or whatever. And then the freshmen, as I say, I think maybe I was lucky in the freshmen. One other experience I had, a fellow popped up one time, and this was in a freshman class, I guess, and said, we'd come around to get you evaluated. I said, I'm doing that myself. I said, and he said, oh, he was very polite. Oh, all right, sir, all right. But I did that myself. I got knocked out of the summer school teacher. Again, I won't name names here.
I don't understand. Start at the beginning here. You said you were
evaluating
yourself.
Well, you have a system now, I guess, of every year at the end of the semester. Students evaluate the teaching.
They fill out an evaluation form.
And the way this was done at the beginning, I don't know how it's done now, was a very clumsy, crude way of pitching the instructor out of the class.
Uh-huh.
And then some foreign force, somebody will come in, often a student, and will do these things.
We'll hand out the forms.
Yeah, I remember one of the, Roberta Borcat, was it, being very upset that one time she was being evaluated, and as she was going out, the student said, we're going to get you now, or something like that. Well, I did it
that
myself.
That could be a touchy issue, couldn't it? Even if the students are joking.
I refused. I did it my way, in which I collected. So the result of that was a new dean came in, and he didn't stay too long, and Freya said that whenever he had a chance to go somewhere, everybody wrote a good recommendation. They wanted him to get out.
They wanted him to leave.
But he wanted to sort of crack the whip. And so since I did it my way, I put in for a summer school teaching because I'd had a sabbatical and he was a few weeks in England, and I was quite enthusiastic. And he said, well, you don't do your evaluations the right way. And if you do them, you have to do them the right way. And I said, well, I withdraw my application. So I continued to do it my way. I didn't have any problem.
Good.